The Green Ribbon. Lou. Coco followed me into the curtained room while Beau and Celie wandered down the corridor in search of privacy. Already steam curled from a golden tub in the corner. What had probably once been a silk dressing screen stood furled beside it, but the fabric had decomposed long ago. They'd woven seaweed into the panels instead. Yawning, Coco unlaced her blouse before stripping it overhead. Though I moved to Reed's side, I didn't bother shielding his eyes. He hadn't so much as stirred since we'd entered Le Pressage, and if the sight of even Coco's exquisite assets couldn't tempt him to wake, we might have been in more trouble than I thought. I snatched a bowl from the dressing table, filling it with bathwater. Then again, this was Reed. If he'd opened his eyes just now, he would have fainted all over again. He was going to be fine. Coco eyed the bowl as she shimmied from her pants and plucked a scarf from the armoire, wrapping it around her hair. Are you bathing him? Nope. Thrusting my shoulder into his, I rolled him onto the hammock, and his magical bed burst beneath us, soaking the carpet once more. Not yet, anyway. She arched a brow and slipped into the tub, scooping sea salt from the pot beside it and scrubbing the gritty substance onto her skin. When I lifted Reed's wrist to submerge his hand in the bowl, she shook her head and sighed. Tell me you aren't doing what I think you're doing. I shrugged. Your mom said he would wake. I'm just helping him along. She said he would wake when he's ready. And? I watched his pants intently, settling into the hammock beside him, my back against the musty wall. My magic wouldn't work, but perhaps he's ready. Her lips twitched slightly as she followed my gaze. His chest still rose and fell rhythmically, but otherwise he didn't move. Perhaps he's not, she said. Well, we'll know in a few minutes, won't we? I expected you to be more worried about this. I've spent the entirety of my life worried, Coco. Nothing has changed. Except it had. Everything had changed. I'd made a promise to Ansel, to myself, when I'd left him in those waters. I wouldn't allow fear to control me for another moment. No, not even for another second. Coco's lips twitched harder as she scrubbed her skin. He'll be furious when he wakes. When he wakes. I arched a devilish brow. Dare I say he'll be pissed? She cackled outright now, leaning over the tub to better see the proceedings. Oh my God, that was terrible. That was brilliant, and you know it. Absurdly pleased with myself, I pushed my feet, just as a veritable army of maids bustled through the curtain. Each carried pitchers of fresh, scalding water in tow. Are you finished, m'lady? One of them asked Coco. When she nodded, the maid held out a silk robe, and Coco, shooting a quick, dubious glance in my direction, hesitated before stepping into it. I hid a smile behind my hand. I couldn't speak for Coco, but I hadn't been waited on since I'd left the chateau at 16. Had anyone ever pampered her? My grin spread as another maid presented her with bottles of perfumed oils for her skin and hair. The others set about emptying the tub and refilling it with fresh water. From the geysers below the palace, one explained through the steam. She selected a gown for Coco, draping it across the ornate, albeit mildewed, chair in the corner. We often visit them to bathe ourselves, yet this is our first opportunity to use their waters in such a fashion. How did you find your bath? She asked Coco. Was it pleasant? Very. Slowly, Coco trailed her fingers along the lace of her nightgown. Thank you. The maid smiled. Very good. Is there anything else you require? Coco touched a tentative hand to her stomach. I'm actually feeling a little sick. We shall send for some ginger tea, just harvested from a ship en route to Amandine. It will settle your stomach. I waited until they'd left before shucking off my bloody chemise and sinking into the tub. The water nearly scalded me, but I relished the heat of it, the catharsis. Dipping my head back, I scrubbed at my scalp, loosening the sand and dirt there. I couldn't remember the last time I'd been truly clean. I glanced again at Reed, who hadn't wet himself and hadn't woken. Coco removed his hand from the bowl. We need to get creative. You could... A light knock sounded from the threshold, and we both turned. It's me, Celie said softly. May I come in? At the sound of her voice, Coco and I both froze, exchanging a panicked look. It wasn't as if we disliked Celie. Indeed, we'd risked life and limb to save her, but we hadn't spent time with her, not really. We hadn't bonded outside of La Mascarade de Crène. We weren't friends. Coco gestured toward the curtain. Go on, she mouthed. Answer her. I waved an agitated hand down my naked body. Coco shrugged, the corners of her mouth lifting. Who cares? You're hot as fuck. Come in, I called, flinging wet sea salt at Coco's smug face. It landed with a splat, soaking her robe, just as Celie poked her head into the room. Hi, Celie. Is something wrong? A pretty pink blush spread across her cheeks at the question. She too had bathed, and she wore her own dressing robe, ruffles rising to her chin. No. Moving the curtain aside tentatively, she stepped forward without looking at either of us, concentrating on the ostentatious gold and glass serving tray in her hands. A chipped china set perched atop it. I just heard you talking. Here. She thrust the tray toward us abruptly. I passed a maid in the hall. She ground ginger for your stomach pains, and I offered to bring it to you. Coco cut her gaze to me, clearly waiting to follow my lead. I scowled at her. It made sense, of course, as Celie wasn't Beau's clinging ex-paramour. But still, how did one react in this situation? Celie had nowhere to go, she had no friends to speak of, and the horror she'd endured. I sighed. The last time I'd spoken to her, she'd loathed my very name, accusing me of stealing Reed away from her with magic. That same night, she'd fled into my arms. No. Realization twisted my already knotted stomach. Into Reed's. She'd fled into Reed's arms, not mine. She probably still thought me a whore. She'd said as much once, right before kissing my husband at the St. Nicholas Day ball. The knot in my stomach tangled further, and the silence lengthened as I stared at her, as she stared at anything but me. Right. I sat forward in the tub, loathing the awkwardness between us. There was nothing for it. I'd have to ask her. Coco sighed hard through her nose before I could speak. Flicking an impatient look in my direction, she started to say, Thank you. At precisely the same moment, I said, Are you still in love with Reed? Startled, Celie finally looked up, and the blush on her cheeks fanned to an open flame upon seeing me naked. She stumbled back a step, and the tray slipped from one hand. Though she did her best to right herself, one hand still flailed wildly, finding purchase against Reed's. Oh, shit. My eyes flew wide. With a small cry, she snatched her hand away from him, and the tray went flying, china shattering against the wall, the carpets, while tea sprayed in every direction. It dripped from her beautiful dressing robe as she dropped to her knees, trying and failing to fix it.
I'm sorry. How terribly clumsy.
Guilt reared her ugly head like a bitch, and I swung my legs over the tub, searching for something with which to cover myself. Coco threw another robe my way. I hurried to tie it as Celie continued spluttering on the sodden carpet, collecting the shards of china in vain.
I didn't mean, oh, the maids will be so upset, and your poor stomachs.
I knelt beside her, stilling her hand before she cut herself. Her gaze swung upward and locked on mine. Tears welled in her eyes. Our stomachs will be fine, Celie. Gently, I took the shards from her and deposited them back on the floor. We'll all be fine. She said nothing for a long moment, simply staring at me. I looked back at her with feigned calm and waited, though I longed to rise, to seek the ease and familiarity of Coco's presence amidst this painfully awkward situation. Celie had no such person to comfort her. She had no familiarity here. And though we weren't friends, we weren't enemies either. We never had been. When she spoke again, her voice was a whisper, barely discernible.
No, I am not in love with him. Not anymore.
Some of the tension left my shoulders. She spoke truth. The waters wouldn't have allowed the words otherwise.
And I'm sorry.
Her voice fell quieter still, but she didn't lower her gaze. Her cheek shone brilliant scarlet.
You aren't a whore.
Coco knelt beside us now, a clean robe in hand. She snorted, puncturing the unexpected sincerity of the moment.
Oh, she is, and I am too. You don't know us well enough.
She extended the robe, arching a meaningful brow.
Yet. Celie glanced down at herself, as if just realizing she'd been doused with tea. Take it. Coco pressed it into her hands before motioning toward the dressing screen. Celie blushed again, looking between us.
You probably think I'm a prude.
So? I waved a hand over the broken china set, and the golden pattern connecting each shard dissipated. Sharpness pierced my chest as the pieces knit themselves back together. I lifted a hand to rub the spot, torn between sighing and wincing. Forgiveness was a painful thing, a sacrifice in itself. You shouldn't care what we think, Celie, or anyone else for that matter. Don't forfeit your power like that.
Because who cares if you're a prude?
Coco pulled Celie to her feet with both hands. She gestured to me.
Who cares if we're whores? They're just words.
And we can't get it right no matter what we do. Winking, I slipped a satin ribbon from the armoire, tying it around my throat before falling into the hammock once more. Reed swayed beside me. I ignored the knot of panic in my chest. He hadn't so much as stirred. Instead, I flicked his boot and added, We might as well do it our own way. Being a prude or being a whore are both better than being what they want us to be. Celie blinked between us, eyes huge, and whispered,
What do they want us to be?
Coco and I exchanged a long-suffering look before she said simply,
Theirs.
Be prudish and proud, Celie. I shrugged, my hand curling instinctively around Reed's ankle. We'll be whorish and happy.
He would wake soon, surely. And if not, Isla, the oracle, Claude's sister, a goddess, would help us fix everything.
We just needed to dine with her first. I glared at the brush on the dressing table. Following my gaze, Coco seized it before I could melt its golden handle into ore. Planting one hand on her hip and grinning in challenge, she said,
It's time, Lou.
I glared at her now. Everyone knows not to brush wet hair. The strands are weaker. They could break.
Shall we summon a maid for a fire, then?
When I didn't answer, she waved the brush under my nose.
That's what I thought. Up.
Rolling my eyes, I slid from the hammock and stalked toward the mildewed chair. It sat before a full-length gilded vanity mirror that had clouded with age. Golden serpents twined together to form its frame. I stared peevishly at my reflection within it, cheeks gaunt, freckles stark, hair long and tangled. Water still dripped from its ends, permeating the thin silk of my robe. I didn't shiver, however. The Melusine had cast some sort of magic to keep the air balmy and comfortable. Before Coco could lift the brush, I suspected she secretly enjoyed tormenting me. Celie stepped forward tentatively, hand extended.
May I?
Coco flicked her gaze to mine in the mirror, uncertain. When I nodded once, part curious, mostly curious, she handed Celie the brush and stepped aside.
The ends tangle, she warned.
Celie smiled.
So do mine.
I can brush my own hair, you know, I muttered. But I didn't stop her as she lifted a small section and began working the brush through the ends. Though she held the hair firm, she moved with surprising gentleness.
I do not mind.
With the patience of a saint, she set about untangling two gnarled locks.
Pip and I once brushed each other's hair every night.
If she felt me still, she didn't comment.
We dismissed our maid when I was 10. Evangeline was her name. I couldn't understand where she'd gone, but Pippa was old enough to realize what had happened. We often snuck into our father's safe as children, you see. Pippa liked to steal his ledger, sit at his desk, and add his sums, pretending to smoke his cigars, while I played with our mother's jewels. She knew our parents had lost everything in a bad investment. I didn't know until all of Maman's diamonds disappeared.
Successfully untangling the knot, she moved on to another section of hair.
Père told us not to worry, of course. He said he would make it right.
Her smile twisted in the mirror's laden reflection.
He did just that, I suppose. Slowly but surely, Maman's jewelry returned, along with all manner of other strange and unusual objects. He changed the lock on his safe shortly thereafter, an impossible lock even I could not pick. Not then, anyway.
Did Evangeline return? I asked.
No.
She shook her head ruefully.
Evangeline wouldn't so much as step foot through our door after that. She said we were cursed. Another maid took her place, but Pip insisted on brushing my hair regardless. I think she wanted to distract me. Per's contacts always visited at night.
She sounds like a wonderful sister.
Her smile turned warm and genuine. She was. We descended into silence for only a moment, Celie continuing to stroke my hair with expert precision, before Coco surprised me by speaking.
And your mother?
Celie spoke without hesitation, matter of fact, as if Coco had asked her not an exceptionally personal question, but the color of the sky.
My mother tried. She was not particularly maternal, but she gave us what she could. Gifts, mostly, but on occasion she'd join us in the parlor while we sewed or played pianoforte. She would read us stories. She could be severe at times, of course, especially after Pippa's death, but it was how she expressed her love.
Coco no longer pretended to be interested in her reflection.
Do you think she misses you?
I certainly hope so. Celie shrugged delicately, setting the brush atop the vanity. She swept my now tidy hair down my back.
But I will see her again soon. Who knows? Perhaps she'll be proud I helped rid the world of Morgane.
Coco and I locked gazes in the mirror. The heartbreak in hers shone clear.
My mother tried.
It shouldn't have been a glowing commendation, yet it was. Celie's mother had tried, and in doing so she'd given more to her daughter than either of our mothers had given us. Unbidden, my hand crept upward to the satin ribbon around my throat, a mark of my mother's love.
Why do you hide it? Celie asked abruptly.
I glanced up to find her staring at me, at my scar. Even Coco seemed to return from her thoughts, eyes sharpening on the emerald ribbon. She arched a brow, and Celie nodded to her.
Coco shows her scars.
Coco's scars aren't shameful.
I tilted my head, fixing her reflection with a narrow gaze.
Why don't you show your scars, Celie?
She looked away then.
I don't have any scars.
Not all scars are visible.
You are avoiding the question.
So are you.
Sighing, Coco joined Celie behind me, her hands threading through my hair. Comfortable and familiar. She leaned down, her cheek hovering beside mine, and our reflections met once more.
How many times have I told you, no scar is shameful?
Mouth set with determination, she plucked at the end of my ribbon, and it fell from my throat, revealing my scar. Except it wasn't my scar any longer. At least it wasn't the scar I'd always known. Gasping, I traced the fine lines with my fingertips, following the graceful curve of leaves, the delicate whorls of petals. Like a silver necklace, it transformed the column of my throat into something rare and beautiful, something exquisite. When I swallowed, the leaves seemed to wink at me in the candlelight.
When did this happen?
When we learned you'd been possessed.
Coco straightened, pulling a small stool over beside my chair. From the pile of its fabric, the upholstery had once been velvet, though the original color and pattern had long been lost. It was simply gray now, its curving legs as rotted as the rest of this place. Coco gestured for Celie, who appeared paler than before, her hands knotted together in apprehension, to sit.
When I decided to hope regardless, my tears transformed it.
Hope isn't the sickness. It's the cure.
Coco slipped her hands into Celie's unbound hair next, surprising me yet again. Judging by the way Celie straightened, the way her eyes flew wide, Coco had surprised her too. She wove the black strands into a single plait down Celie's back, tying the end with my ribbon, looping the emerald satin into a perfect bow.
You should both show your scars, she murmured.
Celie dragged her braid across her shoulder to stare at it, fingering the tails of the ribbon in quiet wonder. Coco plopped her cheek atop my head, and her familiar scent, earthy yet sweet, like a freshly brewed cup of tea, engulfed me.
They mean you survived.